Welcome to Economically Speaking, the information podcast designed to bring you the latest economic development news in the town and the surrounding area. Hosted by Babylon IDA CEO Tom Dolan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am your host, Tom Dolan, and you are listening to Economically Speaking, the information podcast designed to bring you the latest economic news in the town and surrounding area. I've only done that a couple of times. Today we have a returning guest, and as I shared with him before we came on, it's really just to boost ratings.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Happy to help, Tom.
But before we introduce our guest, I just wanted to read and remind our guests that this podcast is not intended to be official, financial, legal, or professional advice. The information shared is only for the purpose of discussion. So I want to, before I introduce our guest, is I could do no better than to read his resume. And when I follow up and tell you why he's here and why we invited him back, I think as you listen to this resume, it kind of spells it all out. So Matthew T. McDonough, Esquire of McDonough, PLLC, is a solo practitioner based on Long Island. With a primary focus on municipal and government agency clients, Mr. McDonough brings a wealth of expertise in providing counsel on federal funding, economic development, land use, real estate, and labor relations. Formerly the village attorney for the Village of Babylon, Mr. McDonough has a deep understanding of local governance and legal intricacies. He currently serves as special counsel to the supervisor of the Town of Babylon, where he has been instrumental in the strategic implementation of marijuana dispensaries across the town. Before entering practice, he served as the chief executive officer of the Town of Babylon Industrial Development Agency, where he oversaw significant development projects such as Wyandanch Rising and Copeg Downtown Revitalization. His strategic vision and legal acumen have contributed significantly to the success of these transformative initiatives. As a trusted legal advisor, Mr. McDonough provides counsel to elected and appointed officials, offering invaluable insights into legal matters impacting municipal entities. His expertise spans diverse areas, ensuring comprehensive guidance in navigating complex legal landscapes. Beyond his legal practice, Mr. McDonough serves as a director of the Board of Jovia Financial Credit Union. He earned his BA from New York University and subsequently pursued his JD from the City University of New York Law School. Welcome to the podcast,
man. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
That's quite the write-up. I'm glad I wrote that. That's awesome. I'm sure some people would like some rebuttal time, but...
No, I can, as knowing you for the amount of time I've known you, I think it's pretty accurate, Matt. And we're happy to have you back.
Happy to be
here. And you're here because of someone special who nominated you, but we'll talk about that guy later. But the New York State Economic Development Council, James W. Griffin Rising Star Award, they honor individuals 40 and under. And you got the Rising Star Award, so congratulations.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, we went up to Cooperstown a few weeks ago, right before Memorial Day, as a part of a larger economic development conference that EDC has. And, you know, they recognize marketing done by other agencies. They recognize Kelly Murphy from the Suffolk IDA for women and what she's done in leadership roles. And an Economic Developer of the Year, and one of the awards is the Rising Star Award, which I received, nominated by.
Yes, right.
Which I appreciate. You know, my whole entire career, even now as a lawyer, has been economic development. So whether I was at the IDA or a practicing attorney, you know, my practice does include a lot more than just economic development now, but it's still a major focus. It's something I enjoy being a part of. It's tough work. It's, you know, I've said it on this podcast, I say it many times, economic development is that. It's development, it takes time. So it's not something that's going to happen overnight. But now, having served in the role as CEO and in private practice, I've seen some of the work that we've done now come to fruition and what it's mean to the communities we've done it in. You know, when we were talking about this award, obviously Wine Dange came up. That's a big project for the town of Babylon, big project countywide, Long Island-wide, statewide. And the Albanese organization really came in as master developer almost 20 years ago between the planning phases and the selection process, and have invested private money, invested with us state, federal, and local money to bring sewers to Wine Dange, to bring the infrastructure necessary to build those buildings. And you really had, I think, the first successful transit-oriented development with mixed use, with retail, with a mix of affordability. And I think it's represented the area well. It's caused a multiplier effect in a way that the housing prices in Wine Dange have continually gone up since this project started. And I think, you know, ridership on the Long Island Railroad at the Wine Dange station as well. So I think it's been a great project, great investment into the community. And as a result, we've all benefited from it. And I think you can sort of point to that as something that's been successfully built, it's in the ground, it's occupied. And you know, we've been talking about housing on this for a while, right, both when I'm on and I know when you've had other guests on.
Sure.
And the rental stock on Long Island is low. It's low compared to the rest of the country. And we saw the stresses that certain events cause on that market that push it to its limit. Sandy, people are displaced from their houses south of Montauk Highway or south of Merrick Road in Nassau County, and they have to move into temporary housing. That temporary housing is most likely going to be a rental, and that rental market caused rents to go up. Rents are as high as they are on Long Island because supply and demand. I mean, it's simple economics. You don't have to even take economics 101. There's not enough housing to create the price drop that we need. So if we want to make that virtuous cycle we always talk about, where people can, you know, grow up on Long Island, we invest a lot of education dollars into kids, we don't want to see that brain drain leave.
Absolutely.
We want to see them stay. That's the investment we're making. I mean, everyone, rightfully so, looks to Long Island's taxes and says they're high, and they are. But a lot of that's driven by the school districts. It costs a lot to educate children, and that's the major investment you make year in, year out in your taxes, is the education, not only of your own children, but others. And we don't want to see that investment leave. We want it to stay here. So part of that, we've heard it from our clients, our IDA clients, our industrial clients, our manufacturers, our warehouse guys. It's simple. They need the talent.
Sure.
They need the education. Long Island is lucky that we do have a very strong base there, but that base can't stay here.
Right.
High cost of living. And the major driver of that is housing. If you're spending more than a third of your salary on housing, you're housing burdened. And it's hard to make up for that. So
sure.
I think in places like Wine Dange, things I've seen come now, whether it's in your role formerly and now on a legal side, the housing stock and the projects that have come in, the innovative ways, the financing of them, it's going to be instrumental to Long Island's future. And part of what you have too is a smart development.
Right. Sure.
So that's not the IDA's role. The IDA's role is to help in assisting these things get built. But how they get built, where they get built, that's more of a town function. And I've been involved with some of that at some level, both when I was at the village and at the town. And I think you can see in what has been built and what's getting built, what's in the hopper, you have smart development.
Mm-hmm.
These things make sense where they're going. They're adding to the community, and you know, the proof is in the pudding. Look at Wine Dange, look at Gray Barn, look at downtown Copeg. There's been massive investments by different developers, by the locality, into getting these things built. It's meant construction jobs, and part or full-time super work afterwards, leasing work afterwards. So there's a lot of economic activity that's getting driven, but always remember that we're informed by what we're hearing from our employers that we work with, and it's saying they can't afford to live on Long Island. We need to find affordable housing options, workforce housing options, and that's what we've been working on, and it's exciting.
Sure. And one of the things we hear is it's, yes, we talk about keeping the talent here, but we've also talked to our clients, right? And you've been on that side too, where they're talking about being able to attract, you know, talent from other places and the sticker shock, when they come here.
Yeah.
So we see that also. And you know, you did a lot of work. You talked about Sandy and what that kind of opened up and what we got to see in another project and something you were very involved with was COPEC.
Yeah.
And that was a big project. Maybe you can just share a little bit of that and how that kind of worked out there.
Yeah, COPEC's always an exciting project to discuss because, you know, Wyandanch was a economically distressed community. The town went through an urban renewal process to sort of say, hey, these are the problems that we have identified and we want to rectify. And that's a very specialized legal process to get things moving. That's why there's a massive developer there. One person, direct where we're heading, how it's going to be built. And that's a public-private partnership to get that going. And you need that in a place like Wyandanch. And it's been successful. You've seen the buildings get built, they're occupied. COPEG was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So COPEG had a similar visioning plan like Wyandanch, where the community was engaged. They entered into charrettes. They talked about what they wanted to see. And that plan was used by the town to create not a form-based code, which is what we have in Wyandanch, but an overlay district. And that district is a geographical area that sets up what can be built in that geographical area if somebody wants to build something beyond what's currently there.
Mm-hmm.
So that process isn't as defined as the form-based code. So it has the same types of principles, how the building should look, how tall they can be, what's the density bonuses, things like that. And, you know, sort of you'd have more density closer to the train station, and then as you go back out to single family residential, there's a smoothing process to make things look appropriate. And this way you don't have a three-story building next to a one-story single family home. So that process and that idea is similar, but the overlay district really opens it up to the market to come in and build what they need to build and what's suitable for that area. Not a master developer who's, you know, working methodically through a plan, a process with the town.
Sure.
Two is there was a lot, it's in a sewer district. There wasn't a need to bring as much infrastructure into COPEG. It was already existing. Also, the train there is elevated, so it's not an on-grade train. Things are a little different. The train in Wyandanch sort of splits the north and south pretty aggressively because once the train has to come through, the gates go down. You can't pass until that's done.
Right.
So, you know, for ambulances that need to get north and south, sometimes that creates a little bit of a problem, things like that, that doesn't exist in COPEG. So the first one to come in and use the overlay district was Conifer. Conifer is a well-known statewide developer of affordable housing. Great team came in and built a 90-unit, two buildings on right near the railroad.
Sure.
And they came in, built it pursuant to the code, leased up right away, and they, as a part of a lot of the development we were doing and still do, we asked for a community benefit agreement from the developer. That community benefit resulted in a grant from the developer to the school district, a grant from the developer to the fire department, and then an investment in an affordable housing fund and an economic development fund. And there was some other park and traffic smoothing things that they also had to participate in. From the economic development fund, we created the COPEG facade program.
Mm-hmm.
We hired a land use attorney, we hired architects and planners, and that we worked with the town to come up with design options for all of the buildings in the geographic area of the overlay district.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a code to say, hey, you know, invest in the facade of your building, put more money into it. So we have a brand new building in COPEG Commons. We have some developments happening elsewhere because of the overlay district that will include some density. But if maybe you don't want to take advantage of that, but maybe bring your building up to, you know, the standards that are sort of coming in. And we had numerous downtown businesses and landlords take advantage of the program. It was a match program. So they had to put up three quarters, and we gave them a quarter. So if it was $100,000 in investment, they had to put up $75,000, we gave them $25,000.
Sure.
That was a clawback, forgivable loan if they didn't perform under the terms of the agreement. You know, we hired an external attorney to help write those agreements and have them signed. And what you've seen is an investment into places that don't necessarily need to do density. They want to keep the building as it is. They want to keep the tenants that they have.
Right.
But they're bringing up the standards of the area.
Absolutely.
And I think you see throughout Copaig, you know, whether it's on Great Neck or Oak or those offshoots off the major drag there, an investment in those buildings. The town at the same time has been putting money into the plaza, into the parking, has an effort, I think, to keep moving in the cleanup of the downtown, which is great. But beyond that, smaller developers have taken advantage of the overlay district, and you've had more units be built in Copaig.
Sure.
Which also has benefited. Those developers, too, contributed to an economic development fund.
Yeah.
To help fund things. So I think Copaig, like you said, it's a great, great story. Different story than Wyandanch, because it was more market participants, developers who saw the advantage, but maybe people didn't want it necessarily. You don't have to follow the same path all the time, and they took advantage of the facade improvement program. So as a result, there's been a major investment into the area. Places like Root and Branch are now open. You know, Copaig, unfortunately, really doesn't have many restaurants, sit-down restaurants in the downtown. But what a great place. We had an event there, I believe in December, with ESD and SBA, Pursuit Lending, and a great gathering place. You know, they have a pizza-making capability on top of a beer-making capability. And
my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see on days that they're open, you know, they have the outdoor beer garden now, beautiful time out right now. You have a couple of drinks. And it's a place that attracts people to Copaig. We were there, and as we were wrapping up, people are wheeling in these huge suitcases. And I was like, what's this about? They flew in from JFK. We're going into the city for whatever they were doing. They're from out of town. One of them was from out of the country. And they literally come from JFK, take the air train, grab a train to Babylon, get off at Copaig, and go into Root and Branch, because it's internationally known.
Right.
And, I mean, talk about a tourist destination. Who would ever think a small brewery like that would be attracting people to Copaig?
Sure.
But it is. Yeah. And it's also a great place locally for people to take advantage of. So, you know, they had come to us a long time ago, eventually found that space, were able to open, I think, around COVID.
Right.
Got through that. And they're a huge success story and, you know, very happy for them. And congratulations to them on all that.
That was a great event, and I, you know, all the things you're talking about that have gone on since I'm here, Copaig, there has been such a difference, you know, in going into the downtown, and the people that invested back because of that program, things look great. They really do.
They do.
The other thing I just want to just kind of touch base on, again, and it was not an easy thing, but again, you worked with the town. And you were very instrumental, again, in the implementation of the marijuana dispensaries, a very controversial type of subject. And you kind of took it, the bull by the horns, and you kind of got the town through that.
Right.
Maybe you can kind of share with us a little bit of how that was.
So there's now four municipalities on Long Island that are opted in. Some are talking about opting in. I think they've seen Babylon's success. They see the tax revenue we've received. And they're interested in maybe opting in themselves. So some of that is changing. Look, there's a lot of stereotypes around marijuana and marijuana use, and you know, a lot of complaints from people that maybe I'm driving on the Southern State and I smell that, the aroma.
Right.
I get it. Everyone, you know, has their view of it. But for the town, the reality was we didn't actively opt in. We acted in by default. So the state law was passed in 2021. It's called the Marijuana Regulation and Tax Act, or MRTA. And the three other jurisdictions are Brookhaven, Southampton, and Riverhead. So they're all Suffolk-based. Nassau's not really in it. But you opted in automatically if you didn't pass a local law that opted you out. So it's an active opting out process. So the town board was split at the time. It fails. And we didn't even get to the local law. That was actually just to schedule the public hearing. It was to order the town board ordering the clerk to put it in the paper to say, we're going to have a public hearing on this.
Right.
So it didn't even get to that level. So by default, by under the operation of law, we were in. But the minute that happened, all five members of the board knew that this was going to be a process that, again, involved community, involved the stakeholders on the other side, meaning people who were interested in dispensaries. And we wanted to hear from everyone.
Sure.
And that's what we did. We had a town-wide survey that went out to everyone. They could comment, let us know. The third thing was the villages had opted out. Mm-hmm. So both the village of Babylon, I was the village attorney at the time, the village of Lindenhurst, and actually Amityville had a referendum. It was on election day. And the people of Amityville voted against it. So those three areas of the town are removed. They have their own zoning, so we're not allowed to locate any type of dispensary there. So you're really talking about the northern part of the town. You know, okay, Kilpeg's involved in that, the northern part of the town. And part of that balancing of the community and what we were hearing from the industry, we came up with the code we came up with. We produced a map. The map shows all the parcels. There's more than 1,000 parcels that were eligible. You have to get a special use permit from zoning. So you write, as a part of your OCM application, you write to the municipality saying you're interested in a particular parcel. We comment on it. We'll tell you if it's in the code or not, because the code contains a number of setbacks. Setbacks from residential, setbacks from places where kids play, going back to the vape rules.
Sure.
You know, look, this is adult use marijuana. It's also called, I think less so now, recreational marijuana, but it's for adult use. So dispensaries themselves, when you walk into a dispensary, you may not buy a single item, but you will be carded. They will ask for your license. When you go back up to the register to purchase, you're going to be carded again.
Right.
So there's a double authentication process. Kids are not going to randomly walk in. You know, some of the things about how colorful things are, the packaging of that, some of that also appeals to adults.
Right.
So it's not this thing that where they're gearing it towards children. You know, their marketing staff is telling them this is what's selling to adults. And this is New York State grown cannabis. It's processed in New York State and it's sold in New York State. So these are all New York State businesses. This is not vertically integrated, so big players really can't enter the state market.
Right.
So if you're on, it's just like SLA, State Liquor Authority. If you produce or distribute, you're on one side, and if you sell, you're on another side. You can't do all of it. You have to be separate. So if you're a dispensary, you're a dispensary. If you're a grower, you're a grower. There's no integration there, except that they allow for a micro business permit, and that name is exactly what it is, a micro business. Very small amount of grow. I think the regulators, when they created it, had an idea that it would be, you know, joke, like a grandma who made pot brownies. But
right.
Those licenses have been issued. Not many, I think, have come out to the island. We've really been dealing with dispensaries where it's an open store or just strictly delivery. So those places don't have a storefront. They have what's required under the law, you know, all the safe packaging and the requirement of a safe. And they do delivery through the app and they'll deliver to you directly. So going back to where the town was, you know, we put those setbacks in, we designated the particular areas, and we worked with OCM on a lot of issues. There are, more so in the city, less so out here, people who are not licensed to sell.
Right.
On the front door of every dispensary, there's a QR code. And you can hit that QR code and see if it's an actual licensed dispensary. A licensed dispensary,
that's interesting,
right, is subject to all the OCM rules. It's gone through the entire town process and the state process. They're not going to do anything to jeopardize their license.
Right.
The other thing is, what did legalization bring? It brought safety. So you hear sometimes marijuana mixed with fentanyl or bad use. Right now, I think, you know, the two issues that have come up have been older users, you know, seeing now things that are legal, that it's not just smoking anymore, okay, it's drinks, it's tinctures, it's gummies, it's all that. Maybe they take too much and they experience some type of nervous reaction to it and they go to the hospital because they're not used to it. Same thing with a kid maybe taking it for the first time, not knowing what to expect. But the reality of it is this is tested. It's tested for metals. It's tested for all sorts of pesticides and things like that. So that the product that's going to the store, the product that the consumer in New York is buying, again, supporting New York businesses, so it's been tested, it's regulated, and that the tax money that you're paying on all of this, because I think the average user who goes in is spending something like $300 to $500 a pop at each
time.
Yeah, $300 to $500,
yeah.
Wow. So that person is paying the dispensary and you know that, but it's also paying a great deal of state and local taxes on
right.
that. The town has done very well in that regard in terms of the taxes it's collected. I'm sure the county's happy with the portion they've received, but the state is taking its tax money and then putting it into two funds. One fund will benefit people who were negatively impacted, and I shouldn't say people, communities and groups that help those communities, so not-for-profits or municipalities, who have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs. The second is for, you know, what happens, you know, there's negative impacts on any time the state legalizes something, whether it's gambling, whether it's marijuana use, you know, it's an addiction. How do you deal with that addiction? They're setting aside money for that to rectify it. So, you know, I think there's a real opportunity here to do it right. You know, other states have legalized. You learn from their mistakes. The rollout from at the state level has not been great. You know, there's all sorts of stuff that they could do wrong. I think they got a lot right, however.
Yeah.
But I think that's also what makes local groups nervous, that if the state regulator is viewed as sort of not all together, you don't get that, you know, that faith
sure.
in them that's necessary to sort of move forward.
Gotcha. It's been very interesting to kind of watch and see how this has developed, and I appreciate your candid approach there. You know, let's talk a little bit about you and your practice today. You know, we're very lucky and fortunate that we still communicate. We use you as an advisor here and also for some of the legal things we're doing, but maybe you can share with us some of the things that you work on, not only with us, but some of the things within your practice and what you're doing today.
Sure. So June 1st, I have been practicing in solo practice as McDonough PLLC for 5 years. So the firm's been open for 5 years.
Time's flying.
Time is flying. So, and throughout that time, it's like, it's been a general practice. I'm a Long Island lawyer. I like the ability to do multiple things. I think in the legal profession, a lot of people specialize now. You find your niche and you sort of go after it. And that's smart. You know, lawyers have a duty of competency. You're supposed to know the subject matter you're dealing with. And if you really are drilling down into one particular subject in the law and you're going to the CLEs and you're learning more as you sort of take on new clients, that meets that, you know, standard of competency.
Right.
With a general practice, it is hard to stay on top of things, but I don't take clients where I don't know particularly the subject matter they may be dealing with.
Right.
But, you know, I'm located in the Village of Babylon on Deer Park Avenue. One of the lawyers in the village, I was and still am, you know, a very municipal focused lawyer. So, you know, go after RFPs for open legal practices, legal counsel. Was the village attorney for Babylon for a number of years, advised towns, IDAs,
sure.
Their employees about whatever issues come up. And, you know, I had the experience of being in your chair and
right.
what that meant. So I also know from your perspective as a client, what did I expect from an attorney in terms of not just delivery of services, right? You want sort of a white glove experience, but what the cost is.
Right.
Because government is beholden to whatever their budget is.
Sure.
And, you know, in local government, there's really a big constraint to operate within those means. Federal government's a little different, right? They can borrow for operational purposes and get those things sort of moving. The towns and state government, they're prohibited from doing that sort of thing. So
gotcha.
They can bond for capital improvements, but they can't bond for operational stuff.
Got
so
it.
They're beholden to whatever their tax levy is. So, you know, municipal is a big part of the practice. So I sort of advertise myself out to the world, and it's work that I enjoy. And, you know, it's, again, whether it's economic development, it's dealing with federal partners, contract, real estate, and, you know, purchasing. All those items and stuff I dealt with while, you know, I was here.
Sure.
And it gives you a good base to start. And then as you continually bring more legal work in regarding those items, you learn more and it just becomes more and more expansive. So the, you know,
yeah,
the ability to provide top-notch legal advice is through continually learning and growing. And that's part of what, you know, has been the nice thing about being a lawyer.
Sure.
Is that you can continue to do that. So,
no, it's good. Do you have, you know, again, having the opportunity to be around you, you know, when I started here and to watch you now and what you've accomplished.
Yeah.
In, you know, in some ways, it's, you know, it seems like a lot of time, but it's really not a lot of time, especially
yeah.
how I watched you, you know, utilize your time, right?
Right.
You were going to school, you were,
yeah.
you were working here, you had a lot of things going
yeah,
on.
Exactly.
And, there's a reason why you're the rising star, man.
Yeah.
And I think the future is also looking, continues to look bright,
yeah.
right? So you're doing this kind of work now. What kind of things do you see or what, you know, what would you like to see for your future or your, as you continue to grow your practice and some of the things that you're doing?
Yeah, it's definitely digging into that municipal sphere. Seeing what other, you know, clients need. I think, you know, when ARPA came out, it gave a lot of municipalities an opportunity to think about how they were going to spend it, what they were going to spend it on, and working with those clients to sort of meet those needs was interesting. But we always find ourselves in new developments. You know, sometimes the world may feel a little chaotic, but if you're able to anchor what people's needs are and how we can deliver them within, you know, what is the constraint, that's part of what my job as a lawyer is, right? Make sure that you're meeting those targets. So,
right.
Yeah, it's definitely one.
So do you see, you know, and just as you're speaking about that, artificial intelligence is a big thing out there
100%,
right now. And,
100%.
Maybe you can comment on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, AI already, right, has
right.
changed so much about legal practice. You know, we have larger, I think, debates, like how we'll replace lawyers and things like that. You know, that's... you know, and always an interesting discussion, but the reality is AI is already present. It's already here.
Right.
You know, Westlaw and Lexis, the big research tools we use as lawyers, are using AI to help refine searches. So,
sure.
You know, it used to be for a search, before this, I'm talking exclusively for the use on internet and software, not books, when you had to shepherdize things, because that's sort of long past now.
Right.
That the search terms you would use needed a Boolean operator. You needed to understand the search world and the universe in order to get what you were looking for or get it faster.
Right.
AI is doing that for you now. So it's almost like a Googleized search where you can just type in, what if this?
Right.
And it will sort of pick through things and help assist in that. So that's bringing down your time. Same thing with the use of, you know, ChatGPT is not a closed system, so, you know, as a lawyer, you have a duty of candor, you know, and, you know, privilege in terms of sharing your information. So some have been using more closed systems like Claude and things like that, so that the information, even though they may not be using the client's name,
right,
isn't getting out there and being shared with the universe. But you're reducing the amount of time you're working on a subject.
Right.
So now my research has been reduced. Okay. Now my time document preparation has been reduced. So I am not spending as much time on that one client, but my billables are going to come down.
Got it.
So what does that mean for me as a lawyer, right? That's how I survive. You know, there is flat fees and things like that and different ways to charge people, but you know, now you're hourly on a client's less. Also, now you got to bring in more, maybe. So there's a discussion on that end as well.
Sure.
But AI is going to be, you know, replacing a lot. in terms of, you know, it can edit, it can bring things down, it can write sometimes more persuasively than you can, more logically, more, you know, with a better flow.
I'm sorry, you're saying me. No, yeah, I'm kidding.
So, you know, I attended a Suffolk County Bar CLE on AI and evidence, and I thought it was very interesting. So, you know, I think people talk about it in, okay, ChatGPT, I put this in, it generates a letter for me. The AI tools in research helping refine what you're saying. All time-saving stuff, all, I think, great. Got to embrace it. You know, terms of people talking about regulation for that stuff. I think we have a network, you know, we have parameters already.
Yeah.
You know, the internet was allowed to grow by federal and state regulators, and, you know, maybe it's gone too far in people's opinions, but that is sort of, for a nascent industry, it's important not to overregulate, overburden, and have politicians making decisions about what's right and what's wrong. So this was developed by people we always associate with the tech world. And we have driven a lot of folks into STEM, and rightfully so. We, as a country, have fallen behind. But it's because of jobs like this that we're sending them into it, because they're high paying, they're the future of the workforce. But what's interesting with AI is, yeah, the back office of it is all your traditional tech, your engineers. But the front end of it, the prompting, engineers are not particularly good at it. Hmm. It's the liberal arts student who knows how to write the question and the, you know, sort of what that training is. And that's an interesting opportunity, because now there's a term, almost a prompt engineer, someone who can prompt AI properly to get the best result out of it.
Got it.
And that it's not the sort of stereotypical STEM worker, it's more of the liberal arts person who never really had an opportunity to enter that world.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's that I find to be, you know, so a lawyer in essence, right, some of what particularly a litigator would do, an ability to ask questions to get the right answer, to cross question to get the right answer.
Sure.
Now apply that, because you don't have to know the language. You don't need to know the binary code. You don't need to know the Boolean operators. You can ask it in English, and what's the best question for that?
Got it.
So I think that's a big part of what's going on.
Do you see it possibly? And again, we're just discussing here. We're definitely off script a little bit, but that's okay. You know, there's like a funnel, right? As an attorney, you're looking to bring clients in to this funnel. Do you see it helping you up front to kind of manage that, the yeah. initial contact?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. Whether it's the phone system or it's the other, you know, initial contact items, there's now AI that I can, I'm not maybe in the office because I'm at a client meeting. But that call cannot just be a voicemail anymore. It can be a prompted system that they go through, that AI has taken care of and created. And now it's an intake sheet to me to sort of move that along, rather than be just a voicemail, hey, Mr. McDonough, I have a legal issue I'd like to talk to you about. This is my phone number.
Sure.
So you could bring that in terms of lead generation. That's, I think, is important.
Sure.
So there's a lot of that stuff going on.
Back to the see bars. In many industries, I think that's going to be huge.
But, definitely. Back to the Bar Association thing, though. So they talked about what evidence could be produced in court using AI.
Cool.
And how does that change it? So there's a standard about evidence, and I won't go into detail about it, but what can be admitted, what can't be admitted. But they did three examples using free or pretty cheap AI tools on the internet. One of them was they had two lawyers record a paragraph from a book that they read into their phones and sent the voice memo. They took those two paragraph read, put it into a system, and had a recording made that had their voices yelling at each other regarding a dispute over custody.
That's scary.
And it's scary. Yeah. And then the second one was they took a picture of the sidewalk in front of the Bar Association, and they used AI to put a crack in it that the person fell over in a tort case. The cracks doesn't exist in the sidewalk. They placed it in there with AI.
Wow.
So how does that change things? And then the final thing was a video. So they, from pictures, still pictures, I think, not even recordings, they photographed two members of the bar standing in front of the Bar Association and then typed up what was going to happen. And it looks like in the video from these still pictures and the prompt that one gentleman threw the other to the ground. So, you know, it's
wow.
A video produced. Now you could tell like choppiness and things like that.
Yeah.
But as time goes on and people are more involved and maybe you pay a little bit more for it, again, these are cheap or free tools online, it was pretty hard to tell.
That's
you know,
scary.
The difference. Wow. But, you know, there was little things here and there.
Yeah. Wow. And that may be a future episode. And maybe
I think that is. I think you don't get me, though.
Yeah. I see it like here. You know, you're talking about, again, we talked about the upfront of maybe a potential client or developer or somebody calling in and having them go through something where you have the information. You know. But I just want to remind also our listening audience, again, we're talking to Matthew T. McDonough, Esquire, of McDonough PLLC, and we'll be able to get all his contact information on the show notes. So go to the show notes, and they will all be there. But Matt, any closing thoughts or anything? You know, one of the things I thought about, as an up-and-coming star, is there anything you would like to share? I know we have some interns that might be listening to, that will be listening, I should say. Anything you want to share? Any words of wisdom, as they say?
Yeah, I mean, when I was here in your spot, Tom, I think the first thing I did was create an internship program, you know, to help sort of feed some of the openings that we had here. You know, the IDA, once you get a handle of it, it's, you know, it's straightforward, but it's a very unique place to work, particularly when you're just out of college, because you don't have much touch on a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
You know, it's real estate based, and so you got to learn that. Then there's what the IDA actually does, how it functions, how it sits in state law, things like that. But I think with the internship program, it's maybe they won't end up here, but they're looking for something else. And it's a place to sort of impart the knowledge I've got when I started here from other people and just sort of paying that forward. I think, you know, we are the benefactor of people who step up for us and help us. And, you know, the way to sort of give back is to help the next people who are coming up in the same way.
Absolutely.
You know, whether you're leaving high school or you're leaving college and you're entering the workforce is so vastly different than school. And in some ways you're prepared because you have the knowledge base to deal with what they're dealing with.
Right.
But you don't necessarily know the politics of the office with a small p, not the big p. You have to deal with a boss and what their temperament is and when things are due and deadlines. And, you know, it's an environment that there's some similarities to school, but not a ton.
Right.
You know, I think when you're in school, you're like, when am I going to use, you know, trigonometry or all this other stuff? Yeah, you may not. But again, it's sort of like this is just a different environment and you have to learn about it and you have to learn on a curve. So I think part of why I enjoy the internship program, coming back, speaking and working through things and assignments, is this ability to sort of say, hey, this is what I learned. This is why I think this way. You don't have to listen to my advice. Just this is what it is.
Right. No, and I hear it's funny you say that. I've had my sons talk to me about that. Why am I learning? I said, you like exercising?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing. You're exercising the brain.
Right.
But Matt, thank you so much. And, you know, again, I'd love to continue the conversation because this is so good. Just getting back a little bit to economic development and the things that we work on, what opportunities do you see? Do you see anything in the future coming that you're excited about or as it relates to this?
So I think the economic environment right now is an interesting one. you know, some of the geopolitical issues that are happening, they're throwing a wrench into certain things, but that might be an opportunity for certain people.
Gotcha.
If you're looking to start a business now when these things are happening and you're able to, you know, get through that storm, there's really nothing that's going to be a major curveball in your time. You know, when I started the firm, it was COVID. People were still not at work yet. But I was able to weather that, and I think now that when minor things come, it pales in comparison when I first started. So I think if you're able to sort of start now, you know, the financial headwinds we're facing, they're unpredictable, and you don't know where things are gonna land. But, you know, sometimes that's not what stops the entrepreneur. He wants to, you know, open up because he has a great idea. I think take that 100%.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being here today and taking time out of your busy day. We always appreciate the opportunity to sit with you. And again, I don't know, you are our reigning champion as it relates to being on this podcast.
I'm glad to hear it. Is it three times?
I think we're at three.
Three people.
Yeah.
All right.
You were the initial. But thank you so much. And I also want to thank our listening audience and remind all of you to please reach out to us if you have any questions, concerns. Please subscribe to our podcast. Again, we are www.babylonida.org. Again, you can go to our show notes for all our contact information, for Matt's contact information. But my name is Tom Dolan. You've been listening to Economically Speaking. Have a great day, everyone.
This episode of Economically Speaking podcast was brought to you by the Town of Babylon IDA. To find out more information about today's topic, our guest, or to simply stay connected, please visit the show notes where you'll find all the relevant links.